WMFO Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Pre-recorded.
Thank you, Henry. Good morning. It's the 1st of July, 2020. For the first half of the show, I'm going to play episode 16 of Fort Laramie, Never the Twain, with an original air date of the 6th of May, 1956. My name is Arthur, and you're listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 and or WMFO.org.
Starring Raymond Burr as Captain Lee Quince. Specially transcribed tales of the dark and tragic ground of the wild frontier. The saga of fighting men who rode the rim of empire. And the dramatic story of Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry.
Lieutenant Seibert's reporting is ordered, Captain.
Oh, yes, Mr. Seibert. I have a special detail for you.
Yes, sir?
We've received a report there's a band of Brule Sioux camped in the North Fork near White Butte. I want you to ride out and see what they're up to.
Yes, sir.
They're too close to the Bozeman Trail. Better take a scout with you. I suggest Dan Tolliver.
I prefer Pete Hazen, sir.
Oh? Why?
I don't care for Tolliver.
He's the best scout on the post.
He's a squaw man.
You've still got a lot to learn about the West, Mr. Seibert. I suggest you might find old Dan Tolliver a very valuable teacher.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sirree, son. I come out to these parts when I was a lot younger than you. Mighty lot younger. Nothing on my cheeks but peach fuzz.
Must have been rugged in those days.
Rugged? Why, son, there weren't a town or village twixt St. Joe on the Missouri and Monterey on the Pacific. Man had room to breathe. Now look at it. Immigrants pushing west every year, filling the plains with dust and damnation. I can't say I blame the Indians for being a mite put out about it.
I'd expect you to look at it their way.
What are you signifying by that, son?
Well, I understand you've been closer to the Indians than some of us.
Well, so I have, in a manner of speaking. Lived amongst them off and on for many a year. Fine people. Decent people.
I saw how decent they were up on the Powder River. Man doesn't look very pretty after they've been decent to him.
What part of the state you call home, son?
Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm. Well, how'd you feel if all of a sudden a lot of people start crowding into your hometown? Moving on to the streets you live in? Moving right square into your house, maybe? What'd you do?
Well, I don't know.
And I know. You'd throw them out, that's what. Well, this whole prairie belongs to the Indian. Yes, sir, it's his home. And he feels about it just the same way as you do about your home.
It isn't the same thing.
Well, it might seem the same to an Indian.
That's ridiculous.
Oh, wait a minute.
What is it?
Indian.
Where?
Down there in that draw.
Oh, yeah. Hey, his horse is bucking.
Yeah.
Look.
Well, first time I ever know an Indian to get thrown off his horse. Let's go. Come on. Yeah. Hey!
Rattlesnake.
He's gonna strike. That's why her horse threw her.
Yeah, that snake ain't gonna be much use no more.
Better get a tourniquet on that leg before the poison starts moving.
Well, you could use your revolver, Lanyard.
Oh, sure. Tell her not to be afraid. Tell her we'll take care of her.
I understand you.
Oh, well. There. It's got the blood stopped. Now, I'm going to have to cut your leg so I can suck out the poison. I'll try not to hurt you.
She's fainted.
It's just as well. I had to make sure to get all that poison out.
That Indian blood tastes any different from regular blood?
What are you talking about? Blood's blood.
That's what I've been talking about.
Help me get her over to my horse.
Where are you taking her?
Back to the fort.
Well, you think that's smart?
We can't leave her out here. She needs a doctor's care.
Well, we could try to find her people's camp.
And leave her with them to die of blood poisoning?
She's only an Indian, son.
All right, Tolliver, that's enough. Let's get our horses. It's a long ride back to the fort.
What you've done may have serious consequences, Mr. Syberts.
What else could I do, sir?
Do look, from the Indians' point of view, you've kidnapped one of their women.
Well, I suggested we ought to find her village, Captain, but the lieutenant said bring her here.
We can only hope they didn't see you.
And that's doubtful. Her pony bolted, and when it gets back to camp without her, there'll be a devil to pay. She ain't no ordinary squaw.
What do you mean?
By the look of her clothes and the way she wears her hair, she could be the daughter of a chief. Lieutenant Syberts, we're here to keep the peace, not to commit overt acts of hostility.
It was only an act of simple Christian charity.
Lieutenant, you'll form a detail at once and return that girl to her people.
But, sir, the doctor says she's got to stay in bed for at least a couple of days.
Corporal of the Guard, sir.
Well?
Post number 3 reports a party of Indians riding toward the main gate.
How many?
50 or 60 of them, sir.
What do you think, Dan?
My guess is to come to parley.
Hope you're right.
Let's see what they want.
I suppose that's the chief riding in alone.
It's Spotted Tail. He's always been friendly.
Well, he ain't dressed up friendly today, Captain. Every scalp he ever took dangling in his belt.
Shall I fall in the company, Captain?
Don't move, Syberts. Greetings, friend. The soldiers of the Great White Father are honored by the visit of the mighty Spotted Tail.
The soldiers of a Great White Father, say one thing, do another. Say want peace, steal land, shoot buffalo, call it peace. Now steal Indian woman, steal daughter of Spotted Tail.
Your daughter was not stolen, Spotted Tail. She was hurt. This officer brought her here so the doctor could help her.
Where is Awapa, my daughter?
She is in the hospital. I'll take you to her.
It's true, my father. White soldier, help me.
Why? Why, enemy of Indian? Save Indian life.
We do not want to be your enemy, Spotted Tail. We want peace.
I hear this many times before.
I'm sorry, Captain, but you'll have to go now.
Come, Spotted Tail. Ahuapa must rest.
Not leave. Daughter belong to her people. I take.
But she can't be moved.
I move.
No, my father. I do as white doctor say.
You come to the lodge of your father.
Captain, I can't be responsible.
Spotted Tail, hear me. Ahuapa will live. She will be well in a few days. If you move her now, she may die.
So medicine man make my daughter well.
Spotted Tail, you can pitch your lodge outside the fort until Ahuapa is well again. You can see her every day.
Spotted Tail, not agency Indian, is warrior. Must hunt.
You can hunt around here. There's plenty of game.
White soldier keep daughter of Spotted Tail in prison.
My father, wise chief. He know this no prison. Is hospital. These no enemy. They friend. Ahuapa here. Ahuapa stay here.
Aye then. Be it so.
Well, Mr. Seibert, your little adventure didn't turn out so badly after all.
No, sir.
But I don't advocate rescuing Indian maidens in distress as a substitute for military duties.
No, sir, only...
Only what?
Had the captain been in my place, I feel sure he would have done the same thing.
Oh?
Yes, sir.
Well, maybe so. She's a spunky little baggage. You, going over to the quarters?
As a matter of fact, sir, I thought maybe I'd drop in at the hospital here.
I see. Well, good luck, Mr. Seibitz.
Thank you, sir. Morning, Doctor.
Hmm? Oh, Lieutenant Seibitz.
How's your patient this morning?
Well, now, I have more than one, Lieutenant.
How is she?
Well, now, by a curious coincidence, she was inquiring about you this morning.
About me?
Yes. She asked me to send for you.
Why?
Why don't you ask her? She's quite well enough to talk to now.
Thanks, Doctor. Morning, ma'am.
Now is good.
You feeling better?
Pain all gone.
That's fine.
Ahuapa owe life to Lieutenant. Ahuapa belong, Lieutenant.
I beg your pardon?
How else Ahuapa show thanks?
By getting well quickly.
Is not enough.
It's all the thanks I need.
It's strange.
What is strange, Ahuapa?
White man? Indian? Both men, white men, think different.
That's because we've been taught differently.
Ahuapa like way white men think. You teach Ahuapa think this way?
That's quite a large order.
But you do. First you teach Ahuapa speak white man tongue.
You speak English very well.
Not good, Ahuapa think. You teach better.
I'll be glad to try.
Good. You begin now.
I don't know where to begin.
How does Lieutenant call himself? Mi Ahuapa. What Lieutenant?
Oh, my name is Seibert. Richard Seibert.
Richard. Good. See? Ahuapa learn first important English word.
Mr. Seibitz?
Sir?
Mr. Seibitz, I may be mistaken, but I don't believe I saw any change in the order of the day.
I beg pardon, sir?
Since when have sash and plume been indicated as proper dress for the officer in charge of guard mount?
Oh, well, it isn't, sir, but I thought it might be good for the morale.
The morale of whom?
Why, the men, sir, naturally.
How's that, Lieutenant?
Well, sir, it also occurred to me that it might make a good impression on the Indians around the post. They put a lot of stock in their own headdresses and ceremonial regalia. I thought it might be a good idea to show them what our dress uniform looks like.
Lieutenant Syberts, the only Indian who witnessed this guard mount was Ahuapa.
I'd noticed that, sir.
And had you noticed that each time you are the officer of the day, she is here on the parade ground to watch you change the guard?
Well, sir, I guess she's interested in soldiers, sir.
Soldiers? Or a certain soldier?
I wouldn't know, sir.
I believe you're off duty now.
Yes, sir?
Then, Lieutenant, I suggest you shouldn't keep the lady waiting.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. It always makes me a little sad to see such a sunset. So beautiful.
My people say they not wish to die. And each evening, Great Spirit must fight with it until it died bloody death. And only when it scalped will night come. Warrior may sleep, gain strength to meet new day.
My people say the sun is a handsome god who rides across the sky in a golden chariot, forever chasing the beautiful goddess who is the moon.
And does he ever catch her?
Never.
He said, story. He should catch her.
He can't, for he belongs to the day and she to the night.
But if he did catch her, what would happen?
Who knows? So great is their love, perhaps the heavens would burst into blinding flame, consuming everything.
Oh, yes. But he would have caught her.
Yes, he would have caught her.
He gone now, your handsome sun god. Gone over edge of world. Great Spirit has killed him.
Oh, no. He's not dead. Look over in the east. The moon goddess comes following after him.
Richard?
Yes?
I am that moon goddess. You are that god of sun. And I follow you always. And never, never may I catch you.
No. No, I won't run away over the edge of the world like the sun. I'll stay here with you. Always. Always.
You're not afraid of blinding flame that consume everything?
I'm not afraid.
Then I'm not afraid.
Good evening, Lieutenant Syberts.
Hello, Piney.
You want a little rye?
No, thanks. I'm looking for Captain Quince. Has he been in?
No, I haven't seen him all evening.
Well, well, well. Hello there, son.
Hello, Dan.
How about you and me having a little drink?
No, thanks.
Oh, come on now. That ain't very sociable. Seems how you and me got a lot in common.
What do you mean?
Oh, you know what I mean.
If you'll pardon me, Mr. Tolliver.
Wait, what's your hurry, son?
I'm sorry.
Oh, now, wait now. Nothing like a pretty little squaw to change a man's mind about Indians, is there, son?
You filthy-minded...
Oh, now, now, son, now wait. There's no cause to get your dander up. I was just a... Oh!
Eddie! Eddie! Now, what's this all about?
Captain Quince... You ought to take better care of this young man of yours. He seems mighty touchy.
Mr. Syberts, you're aware of the regulations covering the conduct of officers in uniform?
Yes, sir, only...
You'll consider yourself confined to quarters until further notice.
Yes, sir.
Captain Quinn's reporting, sir.
Well, good morning, Lee. I hear you refereed a little scuffle over at the Sutler's last night.
Yes, sir.
One of our officers fighting a civilian.
Well, Major Daggett, as far as I can see, he was provoked.
Did Dan Tolliver attack him?
No, sir. Tolliver was taunting him about the Indian girl.
Seibert's in love with her?
Apparently.
Well, his love affair will have to wait. We've got more important things to worry about. That's why I sent for you.
Yes, sir.
Just got a dispatch from Fort Kearney. Some idiot Kansas militia outfit attacked a Cheyenne village last week.
But we have a treaty. We're at peace with the Cheyenne.
Apparently it didn't mean a thing to those brave civilian soldiers. They attacked without warning or provocation. Massacred every man, woman, and child in the village. Come in.
I beg pardon, sir.
Yes, Sergeant. What is it?
The Indians have pulled out. They was there last night, but this morning there ain't a single teepee down by the river. Just a couple of stray dogs.
They got the news quicker than we did.
They always do.
A party of Cheyenne is killed and the Sioux take to the warpath. We may have a general uprising on our hands. Have your company ready to move out in half an hour, Captain.
Yes, sir.
It's not good for daughter of chief to be tied like prisoner.
It's not good for daughter of chief to refuse to follow her people to war.
We are now many marches from white man. Untie me now. I shall stay with my people.
It is good. You will get well in your mind now. The white man medicine make your body well. But your mind sick. You will be well now.
There is much good about white man.
He killed our people.
Not white man at Fort Laramie. It was others. And it was not our people who were killed. It was the Cheyenne. We at peace with white man at Fort Laramie.
White man is white man. Indian is Indian.
And soon white man will kill us all if we not make peace with him.
Then we will die brave in battle, not drunk on reservation.
You will. Warrior will. But what of women? What of me?
For many moon, Dark Elk want you for his wife. Marry him and have many babies.
I will remain with my people as long as I live. That I promise. But I will never marry Dark Elk or any other Indian. Another glass of punch, Major? Captain Quinn?
Thank you, Mrs. Davenport.
On Christmas Eve? Why not? Thank you. Well, Merry Christmas, Lee.
Merry Christmas, Major.
Hey, where's young Seibert's? Thought the doctor was letting him out of the hospital at last.
He'll be along presently. Major, I have a suggestion to make, if I may.
Sure, go ahead, Lee.
This has been a bad winter so far. It looks like it's going to be worse. The Indians are, well, they're bound to feel it. Game is scarce. They haven't the advantages of the treaty supplies we were furnishing them before they took the warpath.
What's your suggestion, Lee?
Call them in for a peace parley as soon as the snows melt, say April 1st. Maybe we can end this useless bloodshed.
Maybe, but I don't think they'll come.
Why not?
After that massacre in Kansas last summer, they won't forget. I can't say as I blame them.
Worth a try, isn't it, sir?
Certainly. Anything's worth a try.
Good evening, sir.
Evening.
Oh, Lieutenant, how's the arm?
Doctor says it's going to be all right, sir.
Lucky you didn't lose it. You should have seen it, Major. Arrow cracked the bone, pinned his arm against his side. It's a miracle he's alive.
I know. Those were Spotted Tails warriors, Lieutenant?
Yes, sir.
Any idea who got you?
Yes, sir. A warrior named Dark Elk. He was after my scalp, I shot him.
That change your opinion of Indians, Lieutenant?
No, sir. They're a fine race of people, sir.
Come in.
Beg pardon, sir.
Yes, Lieutenant. What is it?
Party of Indians approaching the post, sir.
War party?
No, sir. Women and children along with the braves.
Yeah, maybe we'll have a peace parley after all. Let's go out and meet them. Oh, where's Captain Quince?
Right outside, sir.
Major, it's Spotted Tail.
I see it is.
Greeting, soldiers of the great White Father.
Greetings, brave Spotted Tail.
I come in peace and in sorrow.
What sorrows, the mighty chief of the Sioux?
My daughter, Aoapa, has gone beyond the sunset to join the Great Spirit.
She's dead?
The soldiers of the Great White Father join in the sorrow of Spotted Tail.
The winter was long and cold. There was little to eat. A fever came to Aoapa and would not leave her until at last she left me forever. But before she fell into long sleep, she asked two favors. One I can grant. The other I must ask of you.
And what are those favors, Spotted Tail?
She asked me to make peace with a white man. I have come to make peace.
It is good, Spotted Tail. And what is the favor you must ask of me?
Aoapa, love white man. Aoapa, say if she cannot be with white man in life, then she wish to be with him in death. Aoapa, ask to be buried at Fort Laramie.
It shall be done. Captain Quince?
Yes, sir?
Would you be good enough to assign a funeral detail? Full military honors.
Yes, sir. Lieutenant Syberts? Lieutenant Syberts!
Sir.
Take charge of the detail.
Yes, sir.
Fort Laramie is produced and directed by Norman MacDonald and stars Raymond Burr as Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry, with Vic Perrin as Sergeant Gorse. The script was specially written for Fort Laramie by William N. Robeson, with sound patterns by Bill James and Ray Kemper. Musical supervision by Amerigo Marino. Featured in the cast were Harry Bartell, Jack Moyles, Lillian Bayef, Ralph Moody, John Daner, John Stevenson, and Don Diamond.
Company, attention! Dismiss!
Okay, that was episode 16 of Fort Laramie, Never the Twain. With an original air date of the 6th of May, 1956. Sorry, I just had to play a Western, because last week I played two Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, featuring two different lead stars, Bob Bailey and Edmund O'Brien. We're going to have to fulfill an FCC obligation right now.
A social distancing tip.
Keeping your distance from others is important in slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are some fun things to do alone. Read a book, take a walk, unpack your suitcase from that trip you took last September, paint a self-portrait, catch up on a TV series, do a puzzle. Remember, we should all stay home to lower the risk for everyone. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Thank you, Ad Council. My name is Arthur, and you're listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 WMFO Medford and or WMFO.org. This show is previously recorded. For the second half, I'm going to play something I found. It's episode one, titled American Portraits. The Incomparable Doctor had an original air date of the 10th of July, 1951. I will allow the announcer to give you a little bit more background on it. Thanks.
The National Broadcasting Company presents the first of a series of eight radio dramas by George H. Faulkner entitled American Portraits. Tonight's star, Dennis King. Washington, Jefferson, Franklin, Adams. To most of us, these hallowed names represent dim, shadowy figures, barely human, usually posed in patriotic attitudes, stiff with the textbook boredom of countless dusty schoolrooms. It is the aim of this new series of dramatic portraits to blow away some of the dust of years, to show you a few of these distinguished men, not only in their greatness, but also in their common humanity, as they must have appeared to their friends and neighbors. The problems that confronted these men in the past were not, in essence, different from those we face today. Perhaps in the example of their action, we can find inspiration to meet our own difficulties with wisdom. Today in Korea, two groups of men have gathered to discuss a hope of peace, a hope we share with all the world. 175 years ago, a similar meeting took place. The principal actor then is the subject of our play now. May we present Dennis King as the incomparable doctor, Benjamin Franklin.
The date, as I remember it, was September the 9th in the year 1776. I had arisen according to my wont at 5 o'clock. Having sent up a prayer to the Supreme Goodness, I attended as best I could to several items of correspondence and then bent my attention to an experiment concerning ants, which I had begun the previous evening. To my great satisfaction, the experiment proved successful, but unfortunately I fumbled the apparatus at a critical moment and... Oh, dear, that will do it, I'm afraid. Sure enough, here she comes. That did it.
Father, what was that noise? Oh, look at the floor. What is it, Father?
Molasses, Sarah, just molasses and a few harmless ants. Hymenoptera. The common house ant.
A few ants? Why, there are thousands of them, all over the best carpet. What were you doing?
An experiment, my dear.
Oh, another experiment.
Yes, you see, I had formed the opinion that ants possess some manner of communication one with the other. Some form of speech, you understand, and...
Talking ants, what nonsense.
Oh, but it's not nonsense, daughter. I have proved that ants do converse, or perhaps signal to each other. Unfortunately, however, I dropped the molasses pot and it was full of ants.
And so my best carpet is ruined. And if ants can talk, well...
Well, like your own sweet beloved mother, who once thought it extremely undignified of me as a grown man to go around flying kites in the rain. No woman was ever a philosopher, and thank heaven for that. Now what?
Is someone at the door?
With a fife and drum?
No, of course not. That's the children in the kitchen.
Well, we are beset apparently front and rear. Would you see to our visitor while I prepare to repel the invaders? There, never mind the molasses. Step over it.
Oh, dear. Sometimes I wish I were three people at least.
Company, halt! Benjamin, Willie, Ken, Shunt. Now, what can I do for you?
Oh, have you seen any redcoats, Grandfather? We're scouting for lobster bats.
Bang, bang! He's dead.
Don't mind him, sir. Willie, you can't shoot Grandfather.
Oh, I don't know. I might just as well be dead as feeling the way I do this morning. So you're playing soldiers?
Yes, sir.
Bang, bang!
Not now, Willie.
Boys, soldiers, fellow Continentals, how would you like to earn a shilling apiece?
Oh, fine, sir. How?
Father?
Just a minute, boys. Yes, Sarah?
Mr. Goodhue to see you, Father. By appointment, he says.
Goodhue? Goodhue? I don't remember him, but then I don't seem to remember much of anything this morning. All right, show him in, show him in.
Right this way, Mr. Goodhue.
Bang, bang! He's dead.
Mr. Goodhue?
Yes, sir.
Well, kindly ignore these irregular troops and have a chair. Watch out for the molasses on the floor.
Molasses, Doctor?
Oh, yes, we often have molasses on the floor. It's good for the carpet. Now boys.
Yes, sir?
Here's a shilling apiece for you to put in your banks, understand?
Yes, sir.
Now, what do you say you go hunt for redcoats outside in Market Street?
Yes, sir. Come along, Willie.
Bang, bang! Bang, bang! They're all dead.
And now, Mr. Goodhue, now that we've dispersed the rebels, what can I do for you?
I wrote to you some days ago, Doctor, from New York, on the advice of Mr. James Parker, sir.
Parker. Goodhue. Ah, yes, now I remember. You're the gentleman who wished to establish a printing house in the Barbados, and you asked for a loan of £50.
I've scrimped and saved, Doctor, for 15 years, and now...
And now this is your great opportunity, eh? Well, sir, you shall have your chance. After reading your letter and Parker's, I had already decided.
Oh, Doctor, I don't know how to...
No, don't try to thank me, Mr. Goodhue. Here. Here's the money.
I shall pay back every cent, Doctor, within a year at the most. Your prospects
are excellent, else I would not have handed you £50. But I don't want you to pay me back.
You don't want to be paid?
No. A year from now, when you have discharged your other debt, as I'm sure you will do, look about you for an honest man in need. Lend him my £50, sir, enjoining him to discharge the debt by a like operation when he shall be able. Thus, my loan may go through many hands before it meets with a knave to stop its progress.
Oh, marvelous idea, Doctor.
Oh, no. Just a shabby trick of mine for doing a deal of good with a little money. I'm not rich enough to afford much in good work, so I am obliged to be cunning and make the most of a little.
Father?
Yes, Sarah?
There's a carriage at the curb. For you, the driver said. You didn't tell me...
Mr. Goodhue, you'll excuse me, sir. I must be off, but... Oh, wait just a moment. In your letter, I believe you said you had been apprenticed for a time in the shop of a chemist before becoming a printer.
Why, yes, sir. In Boston,
Splendid. Then perhaps you know some substance, some chemical capable of removing molasses stains from fine carpet? I am sure you do. Sarah, Mr. Goodhue here will help you with your problem. Goodbye, my dear.
But, Father, you haven't told me where you're going.
Through the British lines, my dear, to Staten Island, to the headquarters of Lord Richard Howe, who, with his brother, commands all of His Majesty's forces in America, to see Black Dick himself.
But, Father, you're ill. You mustn't undertake another journey. You know you're not supposed to travel yet. The doctor said...
I'm a tired old man, it's true, but when I return from this mission, if I do return, I may have peace in my pocket. That'd be worth a few aches and pains, my child.
Yes, I suppose it would, but...
Now, take good care of Benjamin and Willie, Sarah. Oh, and Mr. Goodhue.
Yes, Doctor?
If you succeed in removing the molasses stain, write me and tell me how you did it. I may be old and tired, but I'm still curious. Good fortune in the Barbados.
Good fortune to you, sir.
May God go with him. Oh, the poor man.
Mrs. Bache, ma'am, your father is the richest man in all the colonies, perhaps in all the world. He has wisdom and courage and love.
so we rode north from Philadelphia to New Brunswick through a long, rainy September day. My companion was young Edward Rutledge of South Carolina, at 27, a member of the Continental Congress. Three commissioners had been appointed by the Congress to meet with Lord Howe. Rutledge, myself, and that pompous, stubborn, and able Bostonian, John Adams. The better to mortify his flesh, of which he possessed a considerable quantity, Adams had chosen to travel by horseback. At a crowded tavern in New Brunswick, we met for supper.
Dr. Franklin, sir, I beg you to remonstrate with the woman who manages this hovel. Perhaps you can persuade her that we can't.
Oh, I've tried, Adams, I've tried. There's only one room, and we must share it or sit all night. And I warn you, I snore most dreadfully.
May I suggest, Doctor, that you sum up for us your own view of the situation we face tomorrow?
Gladly, Mr. Rutledge.
Is more than one view possible? The whole thing is a humbug, a trap, a device to place the blame for war on the Congress.
Now, that may be true, Adams. But let us examine the lines of the trap, if trap it be, so that we may better avoid its jaws. Now, here is the problem as I see it. One, General Washington is badly beaten on Long Island, and General Sullivan is captured. Two, General Sullivan is returned to us in Philadelphia, hale and hearty, with a message from Howe suggesting a conference on peace terms.
Sullivan is a vanity-ridden windbag. Would that the first bullet fired on Long Island had passed through his head.
My, Adams, you are fatigued. Well, point three. Sullivan tells Congress that Howe holds the power to make peace, that he has new powers.
Which powers Sullivan described to the Congress in the vaguest and most confused of terms.
Because those powers do not in fact exist. Sullivan has let himself be used as a decoy duck.
Oh, that's possible, yes, but we cannot afford to assume that it is true.
Your advice then, Doctor?
Let us proceed on the morrow with an open mind, but with the greatest care. Lord Howe is a man of honor. I knew him in London, and I know him sincerely. He desires a peaceful settlement.
Do you want peace, sir? Do you want to see all our work undone?
There never was a good war, Adams, or a bad peace. But it takes two to end a quarrel, and I share your doubts concerning the good intent of Lord Howe's masters in London.
In London, I happen to know, the King's ministers have a list of those among us who can hope for no pardon under any form of settlement. Those of us who will hang. My name heads that list.
Oh, no doubt the list includes my own name, sir, down among the F's. Can we not approach Lord Howe in one mind, an open one?
You were chosen to lead this mission, Doctor. I shall follow your lead, unless and until your words run counter to my own convictions. And now, with your permission, I shall retire. Good night to you.
And I, sir, must be off to my own lodgings.
Sir, you were fortunate in finding friends in New Brunswick, Mr. Rutledge. I shall have only the company of Adams all night, and I think I'll postpone that pleasure by writing a few letters.
Well, it's after midnight, Doctor. We must be off again at dawn.
Well, old men need little sleep, son. Good night to you.
Good night, Dr. Frank.
Good night, good night. Now, let's see. My dear Linnaeus, in regard to your theory concerning communication among ants, I am sending to Sweden with your friend Peter Kahn a description of a...
Beg pardon, sir.
Yes, madam.
You're Dr. Franklin? The great Dr. Franklin?
I'm Benjamin Franklin, yes.
My name is Wilkins. Mary Wilkins. I've been running the tavern here as best I could since my husband... Well, since he...
Your husband is with the army?
He was killed, Dr. Franklin, on Long Island.
Dear woman, I am sorry.
It isn't true, is it? It can't be true what the soldiers are saying.
And what are
that
they?
That Congress is making peace with the British. That the politicians are selling out the army. That you are going to Howe to surrender. That John... That my husband gave his life for nothing. Nothing. Nothing.
No. There, Mrs. Wilkins, don't weep. Now, don't weep.
But is it true? Is it true?
No, ma'am, it is not true. We are going to meet with Lord Howe, yes. But I give you my word, Mrs. Wilkins, that we shall do nothing in our negotiations to dishonor the sacrifice made by your husband.
I believe you, Doctor.
Well, most people do, ma'am, since I always tell the truth. And now I think I'll change my mind and retire. Would you kindly show me to my room, ma'am?
Right this way, Doctor. I'm sorry it's so small and only one window. Mr. Adams complained most bitterly.
It's very like Mr. Adams.
Here we are. Good night, Dr. Franklin.
Good night, ma'am. Good night. And remember my words. Oh, Lord, tis small indeed. No chimney, one window, and the window closed, of course. Well, we'll see to that. That's better.
I say, who's there? Franklin, you're not opening the window.
Of course I'm opening the window, my dear Adams.
But the night air, Doctor, will catch our death of cold.
Well, I already have a cold. Now, if I leave that window down, you'll have one too in the morning. Colds are caused not by night air, as silly old wives believe, but by the absence of air in confined quarters, by the effluvium of the lungs, sir. Breathed out into closed spaces, and I can give you positive proof. Well, sir, do you wish to learn about my investigation into the cause of the common cold? They're asleep again. Younger men today, they have no stamina, no curiosity.
I wonder if Sarah ever got the molasses off the floor.
From New Brunswick in the gray and drizzling dawn, we'll jolted along to Perth Amboy and then took barge to Staten Island. There we were received with polite ceremony and every convenience, including a company of very large Hessian grenadiers drawn up at attention to our honor. Lord Howe met us on the beach in cordial fashion, led us to his headquarters where we were served bread, tongue and cold ham with a most excellent claret. Even Adams forebore to frown at the wine, but his customary expression returned as Lord Howe began...
And now, gentlemen, to the matter of our meeting. Dr. Franklin, you in particular should be sensible of my personal desire for the ends of peace.
I shall always be grateful for the help you and your charming sister afforded me in London towards those ends. Nevertheless, sir, you have conveyed an army hither to make war upon our people.
Doctor, I lingered 2 months in London in order to obtain from His Majesty the power to make peace rather than war. And I succeeded in that endeavor. But whilst I strove for peace, your Congress has declared independence. It must be understood that I cannot treat with you officially as representatives of a rebel confederation.
What did I tell you, Franklin? The whole affair's a useless waste.
Mr. Adams refuses to believe that you have any real news to give us, my lad. He denies that you have authority to treat on any new basis whatever.
That authority I do have, Doctor, as I told your General Sullivan. But my writ does not run to the granting of status to a rebel Congress. Come, come, gentlemen, 'tis a small matter. A thing of form, not of substance. I am compelled to protect myself. I must treat with you simply as 3 gentlemen of ability and influence, as private gentlemen.
Stuff and nonsense. I was sure.
Now, Mr. Adams, an open mind. Well, perhaps a compromise in etiquette can be arranged. Let Lord Howe look upon us in any view he finds convenient. We, in turn, shall be at liberty to consider ourselves in our real character. Thus we may converse as friends in a political vacuum, so to speak.
Very well. Does Mr. Adams object to vacuums?
I know nothing of such nothings. You may consider me a private gentleman, my lord, if you wish, or in any other character, except that of a British subject.
And so it went back and forth for 3 endless hours. During every second of those hours, I searched for that impossible, final, last, dear hope of peace. Peace with independence and honor. And so did Lord Howe after his fashion. You see, it was not simple, this revolution you read about. It wasn't a case of red-coated villains against saintly heroes in continental buff and blue. It was a complex and mixed-up affair, like your own life and your own time. Your life and your time were in the balance then, in that farmhouse on Staten Island when young Rutledge said...
May I remind your lordship that we've just begun to answer force with force? At the expense of £3 million, Britain managed to kill 150 Yankees in the Massachusetts campaign. That's £20,000 a head. Any move against South Carolina, sir, will prove considerably more expensive.
I understood we were to talk as friends, gentlemen. Mr. Rutledge has escaped from the vacuum.
Our southern colonies are noted for explosive native temperament. Mr. Rutledge was speaking as an honest friend.
I was indeed, Lord Howe, with all my heart. And in all honest, friendly, fellow feeling, may I urge upon your lordship the advantages Britain might obtain from an alliance with these independent states? Allied as co-equal partners, my lord, we might lead the world and bring peace and plenty to every corner of the globe. As subjects, sir, we have cost you money and blood. And that cost will mount and mount and mount as long as you try to keep us in subjection. As friends and equals, there'd be no limit to the prosperity and the dignity we might mutually achieve. If you will but recognize our independency, sir.
Independency? There, I'm afraid, is the heart of our dispute. Is there no way of treading back this rash step of rebellion, gentlemen, and so opening the door to a full discussion of the new terms I bring?
Your new terms do not then encompass the possibility of independence or even the possibility of a discussion upon the subject?
No, Doctor, they do not.
Then I fear we three have traveled a long, weary road to no purpose. The step of independency, as you call it, was the inevitable result of many earlier steps. We were forced down every inch of that path. We were forced by fire and the sword toward the end. Now, sir, our American independence and our American honor are one. May I quote? These colonies are, and of right ought to be, free and independent states. And now, my lord, we shall take our leave with your permission.
If you must, Doctor. If you must.
And about time. Come along, Rutledge. Dr. Franklin.
Stay but a moment, Doctor. You understand, do you not? You understand.
That you are a man of goodwill. I do so believe, Lord Howe. At 70, I understand too many things.
I wanted peace, Doctor, with all my heart. But could I betray my king?
And I wanted peace, my lord, with all my heart, with all my will, with all my mind. But could I betray my country? We are victims, sir, victims of history and heartless time. One day, perhaps, many, many long centuries hence, this world will be ruled by men of reason and fortitude and human-heartedness. But now, alas, the children rule with their little toy drums and their deadly little bullets and their cherished falsehoods. And so, my dear good friend, henceforth you are my enemy and I am yours. May God bless you and destroy your armies.
Dr. Franklin, sir, can you tell me what happened with Lord Howe?
Oh, nothing happened, Mary. Nothing has changed. The war will go on. Does that make you happy?
I don't know. Do you know, sir?
No. I don't know, my dear. I don't believe anyone really knows. And I could say to young Rutledge at supper back in New Brunswick when he, too, made inquiry.
Doctor, I've listened to you today with the deepest admiration. I'm young, sir, and, well, I can see I need your guidance. Do you move in these matters according to some general rule?
By many rules, according to circumstance, but by one axiom that always prevails. It's an old-fashioned one, I'm afraid. It reads, honesty is the best policy.
But, sir, that's all very well in dealing with gentlemen and officers such as Lord Howe. My career, I expect, will be cast among lawyers and politicians.
Well, in dealing with politicians, son, I still take pains to speak the exact truth. That is my only cunning. And the politicians are so corrupt that I always fool them by this means. If the rascals knew the advantages of virtue, they would become honest men out of sheer rascality. And again, back in the little stuffy room with John Adams, the window being open this time, for even an Adams can learn.
I must admit, Franklin, you surprised me. I had thought last night that you intended to yield. You know, I could feel the rope around my neck.
Ponder not too often upon that noose, my friend. With the help of God and General Washington, we'll yet escape His Majesty's gallows.
With the help of God? You surprise me, Doctor. I didn't know you were a religious man.
I conceal the fact as best I can. But tonight, after the event we have witnessed, well, John, would you join me in a prayer? It's one I compose myself, a manner of litany, and I try to offer it up at least once a day.
I must say, Doctor, I'm fairly tired out for
praying. All you need to do is to join in the responses. My prayer goes like this. That I may be preserved from atheism and infidelity, impiety and profaneness, and in my addresses to thee carefully avoid irreverence and ostentation, formality and odious hypocrisy. Help me, O Father.
Help me, O Father.
That I may be sincere in friendship, faithful in trust and impartial in judgment, watchful against pride and against anger, that momentary madness. Well, John?
Help me, O Father.
That I may be honest and open-hearted, gentle, merciful and good, cheerful in spirit, rejoicing in the good of others. Rejoicing in the good of others. Asleep again. Ah, well, it takes only one to make a prayer. And for as much as ingratitude is one of the most odious of vices, let me be not unmindful, gratefully to acknowledge the favors I receive from heaven. For peace and liberty, for food and raiment, for corn and wine and milk and every kind of healthful nourishment, good God, I thank thee. For the common benefits of air and light, for useful fire and delicious water, good God, I thank thee. For all thy innumerable benefits, for life and reason and the use of speech, for health and joy and every pleasant hour, my good God, I thank thee. Amen. And so, to bed.
Have been listening to The Incomparable Doctor with Dennis King as Benjamin Franklin. Other members of the cast were Martin Blaine, Brooke Byron, Ivan Curry, Gavin Gordon, Vinton Hayworth, Alan Hewitt, David Pfeffer, and Ethel Wilson. The orchestra is conducted by Milton Katims with a special score composed by Alan Shulman, utilizing thematic material from a string quartet composed by Benjamin Franklin himself.
Happy 4th of July from Arthur, here on the Grand Hour, 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org.